Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Happy New Year. First case.
May it please the court, Lucy Lasecki on behalf of the defendant appellant, Dwayne Haskins. Your Honors, I will do my best to be brief this morning because I think both sides were very thorough in their briefs, and I know the court is well familiar with them. But my main point that I'd really like to make today is that at least three out of five of the arguments that I've presented in my brief, the constructive amendment, the failure to instruct on the meaning of the term reasonable cause to believe, and the insufficient evidence are all really tied to the same underlying basis, which is what facts at the time of the sale of the firearm in this case did Mr. Haskins know or have reasonable cause to believe with respect to Mr. Eller's felony status?
I am very interested to know why you're raising your ineffective assistance counsel argument. Do you truly believe that the record sufficiently developed? Because if Mr. Haskins isn't absolutely certain that he wants to to decide the issue now, we ought not to do that, because if we do it at this time, it's going to cause him to forego any ineffective assistance we have for a 22.
Yes, Your Honor, and I do apologize if my reply brief on that point was unclear, but I did indeed want to withdraw that argument on Mr. Haskins' behalf at this time in order to preserve all possible arguments. I had some concern about waiving any aspect that was in the record, but I think the government was correct in pointing that out, that it would result in a waiver of all, and I definitely...
I think you said you're willing to withdraw it, so you are now withdrawing it.
Yes,
right.
Back to the point I was making about the facts at the time of the sale of the firearm. Your Honor, on all three of these points, the district court constructively amending the indictment and the prosecution constructively amending the indictment to eliminate any proof, any need to prove that Mr. Haskins was in fact aware that Mr. Eller had been convicted in 1993 of being a felon in possession. No proof was presented on that. I think it's unequivocal. Both sides agree. And it shows that Mr. Haskins really didn't have basis to believe that Mr. Eller had any type of felony conviction at all.
But I think we have the same question for you. Isn't Eller's testimony that he told isn't that alone sufficient to support?
Your Honor, in this case, certainly the government itself urged the jury, don't believe Eller alone. And it really doesn't make any sense when you look at the context in which Mr. Eller supposedly told Mr. Haskins and Mr. McLean about his felony conviction from 1993. He says he brought it up out of the blue when he was talking about an arrest that was made in 1999 that did not result in a conviction. So why would he suddenly bring up a 1993 arrest and conviction when he was talking about a 1999 arrest that didn't result in a conviction? It just doesn't make any sense, that especially the way that Mr. Eller presented himself to everyone at the club where he and Mr. Haskins and Mr. McLean of the Lake County Prosecutor's Office all worked together. He presented himself as a police officer, running around, driving his squad car with flashing lights, wearing a white shirt, black tie, carrying a gun openly. Those really are not the kind of actions of someone who's a felon who can't carry a firearm. Everyone knew that he carried a firearm. He did it openly. He did it in the course of his duties at the club where they all worked under the supervision of someone who worked in the prosecutor's office.
What was the market value of that Beretta that was sold?
I'm not sure what the market value was, but I believe Mr. Haskins sold it for $420.
I understand he sold it, but I mean, normally if you're a police officer or something like that, you'd go to a you wouldn't buy a gun under those circumstances unless you got some kind of a great deal, I would assume. The question here is whether he knew he was selling to a felon, whether Hawkins knew he was selling to a felon. And I don't think that you can get a lot of mileage out of not knowing the precise date or year or charge that resulted in the prior felony conviction. But if he was selling to a felon, knowingly selling to a felon, then I think you're going to be stuck with that. But the circumstances of his defense being, I didn't know this guy was a felon, but why would a police officer buy a gun like this under these circumstances unless this was some sort of an incredible deal, half price or something like that?
Your Honor, there certainly is no proof in the record as to why Mr. Eller and Mr. Haskins engaged in this transaction, who brought it up, what brought it up. From the tapes that we reviewed, it's really not clear what Mr. Eller's motivation was. But
well, Mr. Eller was cooperating at that time, so his motivation is to pull somebody, other fish into the net and help himself.
True, but any kind of motivation that he could have presented to Mr. Haskins to make it appear plausible. But certainly he and Mr. Haskins were colleagues. You know, Mr. Haskins had a gun. He didn't want to have this gun. It was mistakenly given to him by the Gary Police Department itself. You know, perhaps Mr. Eller said to him at some point off the record, you know, I'd really like to get a gun. Do you know where I can get one cheap? I mean, who knows what was said. But from the information that we do have, it wasn't beyond, the proof was not sufficient beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Haskins knew that Mr. Eller had this felony conviction at the time of the sale.
This is such a bizarre case because when Eller sees the gun, doesn't he say, hey, that's the gun that was taken from me at the raid at this club? How did you happen to get it? Did he recognize it as the gun he had prior possession?
That's certainly a good question. And, you know, it just, again, shows that Mr. Eller was really just wanting to get anything he possibly could to aid in his own defense, to minimize the charges against himself. And certainly, if you look at the last tape, he does have an exclamation of surprise when he looks at the serial numbers and realizes it's his own gun. Whether he actually realized it when Mr. Haskins was handing it to him or not, we simply don't know. But if he did, certainly it was in his best interest not to alert Mr. Haskins, oh, that's my gun, just give it back to me for free, because, of course, he wanted to make the sale to try and trap Mr. Haskins. Just as Mr. Eller said after the sale had been concluded, oh, I need to, you know, get my prison straightened out, et cetera. But, again, that was after the sale. And if you look at all the information that we actually do have, prior to the money changing hands, it's really not sufficient, and there really isn't a basis for Mr. Haskins to believe that Mr. Eller was a felon. If you look at the cases under 922D, none of them are the kind that have the kind of facts that we have in this case, where everything is just so on the borderline. And the benefit of the doubt should certainly have gone to Mr. Haskins and not to the government. Even the Peters case itself, which the government places a great deal of reliance on, the facts in there are amazing, and the court decided that under a reasonable cause to believe standard. They didn't even say in that case that the defendant knew that the person was a felon, just that he had reasonable cause to believe that the person was a felon. And the person who was a felon explicitly referred to his felony conviction at least three times, talked about his, quote, damn felony conviction, said he had been convicted in Georgia of assault on his old lady, said a felony conviction, they don't do take that off. And before the firearm sale actually was completed, unlike our case where it was said, something was said after the sale, he said, if the attorney gets that felony conviction off of me, then I can do what the hell I want. And that's a case where the court said he did not have, he had reasonable cause to believe, not even knowledge. I mean, and in this case, the government is saying it was reasonable for Mr. Haskins to believe it based on these kind of fluffy statements. Maybe Eller said something to him, but maybe not. Eller's a cooperating witness. Why should we believe him? Even the government says don't believe him.
But and the jury did believe him. And, of course,
and And, Your Honor, we really don't know what the jury based their conviction on. And, again, it's our position that this ties in as well with our argument about the failure to instruct the jury. Did they know what reasonable cause to believe meant?
Yeah,
did they
know? But, you know, we don't. The 11th Circuit does. We don't have a definition. But the government says that apply a common sense to the term to really failing to provide such an instruction for the phrase.
Your Honor, really, in this case, though, the district court, the government itself, were struggling. And in the transcript on the instructions conference, it shows there was really some serious question about whether that instruction should be given and knowing that it could have an impact on the jury. And particularly given this peculiar statute, there isn't a lot of case law under it. There isn't a lot of guidance as to what reasonable cause to believe means. It's not the kind of reasonable doubt. We all are familiar with that. We see it on TV all the time. But reasonable cause to believe, I mean, was that confused with a kind of preponderance of the evidence standard as to what a reasonable person would believe? I think it should have been emphasized to the jury that that is a difficult standard, almost as difficult or maybe as difficult as reasonable doubt. What does that mean when you think about it? What would give you reasonable cause to believe? Just the way someone looks, the way the government is trying to say, Haskins knew that Eller was a felon the first time he saw him. Well, come now, that doesn't really have any true force. Are we supposed to just...
Well, the force would be if you don't believe him, right?
I think that maybe...
I mean, if I say that somebody seated out here is a felon, at least that's my belief, do you need more than that?
Your Honor, I think that you do need more than that. Why would it... What
and
is
they
that
are,
based on?
And in fact, they are a felon.
But what were you basing your belief on? Was it a reasonable belief? If it's just something subjective, is that something enough to send a man to prison for 15 months? Just that he had some intuition that maybe this guy was a bad character?
You want him under oath?
Well, certainly he voluntarily agreed to conduct the interview, and it can be given whatever weight it was given. But
that's why we have juries. I mean,
and in this case, because of the failure to instruct them and really because of the insufficiency of that evidence, if they had evaluated that evidence, which again, as outlined in the brief, Mr. Haskins' view is it certainly doesn't meet the kind of threshold in other cases where 922D convictions have been upheld. But even if they did, they would have been aided had they actually been given some guidance as to what does that term mean. Why was it reasonable for Haskins to have that belief? They didn't really evaluate it, and the government certainly hasn't presented anything to suggest that it was reasonable for Mr. Haskins to have that belief. I'm not sure how I'm doing on time.
Your white light is on.
You're running into my rebuttal time. Oh, there we go. All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Mr. Lanter.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dean Lanter, and I represent the United States of America in this appeal. Your Honors, neither the district court nor the government constructively amended the indictment at trial. In this case, the government was required to prove only three elements. First, that Dwayne Haskins sold or otherwise disposed of a firearm. Second, to an individual who, in fact, was a convicted felon. And third, that at that time, Haskins knew or had reasonable cause to believe that Eller was a felon.
Is there any evidence at trial that Haskins did know the specific nature of Eller's felony conviction?
No, Your Honor.
Then why include the details of the felony conviction in the indictment at all?
Inclusion of that in the indictment was the government's way of putting Haskins on notice from the beginning of the case. This is the felony conviction that the government intends to rely on to prove the element of Darrell Eller is a felon. Darrell Eller has more than one felony conviction, some going back to the early 1980s. And one of those is there's some difficulty in proving that. The government's intention in putting that language in the indictment was to signal to Mr. Haskins and his attorney, at trial, the government is going to prove that Darrell Eller is a felon through use of this conviction. We're not going to surprise you by using some other felony conviction. The government submits that if at trial, for instance, there was some problem with Darrell Eller's 1993 conviction, if it was overturned or if that was not a valid felony conviction for some reason, the government, because of the way it constructed the indictment, could not then go and say, oh, wait a minute, there's this prior conviction from the 1980s. That's what the government limited itself to. In all of the discovery in this case, in all of the documents and tapes and everything associated with this case, there was never anything in any of the discovery to suggest that Haskins was actually aware of Darrell Eller's 1993 felony conviction. So as the district court found at trial, Haskins was neither surprised nor misled by the government's theory of the case in switching its proof regarding the element of felony conviction at trial.
You know, you might win on this point, but I just think this is such a cheesy case to bring by the government. I really do. I mean, you wait 2 years before this Hawkins is interviewed. It doesn't appear that he's in the business of selling guns to drug dealers or something like that. Got a pretty good, he's got no criminal record.
Your Honor, the circumstances of Mr. Haskins selling this firearm, especially to someone that he knew and had reasonable cause to believe was a felon at a school, in the government's opinion, justifies prosecution in this matter.
Well, why did the government wait 2 years before they went to talk to him about it?
At the time that the firearm was bought from Mr. Haskins in May or April of 2003, the government was also using Mr. Eller as a confidential informant against an individual named Arthur McLean, who is an employee of the Lake County Prosecutor's Office. As some of the evidence at trial showed, Eller was used in making recorded conversations with both Haskins and McLean throughout the summer and early fall of 2003. As Agent Mitten testified at trial, the government, in order to bring the charges against Mr. Haskins for the 2003 incident, had to satisfy itself that it's done using Darrell Eller against Arthur McLean in the investigation against him. Otherwise, Darrell Eller's cover would have been blown.
Let me ask you this. This case was not defended on this basis, but this particular gun, due to some mishaps with the police department, was actually owned by Eller. This was Eller's gun, was it not?
It's a gun that was, in that sense, yes. It was a gun that was originally illegally purchased by Arthur McLean for Darrell Eller.
But it was Eller's gun.
Yes.
If I have Judge Keeney's gun, and he is convicted of a felony, and I happen to return it to him, am I violating this section of federal law?
If you have Judge Keeney's gun and he's a felon, he loses it or it's confiscated by the police?
No, I just have it. I've had it for years, and now Keeney gets convicted of a felony. Can I give it back to him without violating the law?
I believe that in under those facts, yes, you would be. And
I would be able to do that without violating the law.
I believe that you would not be able to do that without violating the law, because if you knew or had reasonable cause to believe that Judge Keeney, under your facts, is a felon, and there's case law out there that addresses the issue of if you're just lending someone a firearm, it's your firearm, I'm going to be gone for a week, I know you're a felon, Can you store this?
No, that's not my example. This is Eller's gun.
Yes.
I mean, I understand that he can't possess it, but he has ownership of this gun when it is given back to him by Haskins.
In exchange for over $400,000.
Or Hawkins, whatever.
Haskins, whether he knew or did not know that this was previously Eller's gun, he had it in his possession. Eller had to pay over $400 in order to get it back from Haskins.
What if he gave it to him without any money?
If he gave it to him...
That's my example. I'm just giving it back to Keeney.
I believe if you gave it to him, it would still be a violation of Section 922D1. Obviously, it gets closer to the cases courts have addressed on the point of lending someone a gun than it does to selling someone a firearm that's now in your possession, in yours, for all intents and purposes. That gun may have previously been Darrell Eller's firearm, but when it was confiscated from him and accidentally returned by the police to Dwayne Haskins, in Haskins' mind, that became his firearm. And
what if the police accidentally, instead of giving it to Haskins, accidentally gave it back to Eller? Were they violating the law, giving a firearm to a felon?
If the police did so under circumstances where they knew he was a felon, I believe that, yes, they would. They also probably have some other problems as well.
Mr. Lanter, are you comfortable discussing United States versus Groves? Because, that's our court's recent opinion. Argument that commerce satisfy 922 commerce requirement. I wondered if you thought that affects your commerce clause.
I'm not familiar with that case offhand, Your Honor. I believe regarding the commerce clause issue under the facts of this case, there was no commerce clause violation. That the commerce clause does not, that basically Section 922D is not unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause as it's applied to this case. Addressing for a moment the sufficiency of the evidence, in this case, there was, in the government's mind, more than sufficient evidence. Ms. Lisecki refers to in her brief, and again at the oral argument today, that the government in its closing argument told the jury not to believe Mr. Eller. That is not the case. The government stated in its closing argument, I don't want you to believe Eller by himself. Anytime you're working with a confidential informant, it's always good to have corroborating evidence, and that was the government's position with the jury. Don't believe Darrell Eller by himself when he says, I told Dwayne Haskins and everyone I worked with I was a felon before this firearm sale occurred. Consider it in light of the other evidence. The government's position is that Eller's testimony is sufficient on the intent element. Beyond that, however, there was also the recordings prior to the sale and during the sale of the firearm. On April 9th, the day before the firearm was sold, Haskins told Eller, if I sell you this firearm, I won't have to go to the gun store and buy one for you. There was also evidence that Haskins had previously bought firearms from firearm stores, and the phrase for you is significant in that case because it's inferential evidence of Haskins' knowledge that Eller was a felon and he couldn't go to the firearm store and buy one for himself. Haskins again stating, I won't have to buy one for you. On the following day, prior to the actual exchange of the firearm, there's more inferential evidence of Haskins' knowledge or reasonable cause to believe Eller is a felon. Prior to the transfer of the firearm, in which the money is counted out, Haskins again talks about having to buy another firearm for Eller. He also tells Eller, if you have to throw that firearm, throw it, and I'll get you another one. And Haskins' statement that if you have to throw it, and I'll get you another one, again, is inferential evidence that he knew or had reasonable cause to believe Eller was a felon. Finally, Eller also mentions his felony status in the sense of He uses some derogatory language, but he talks about getting his stuff straightened out. Haskins' response is basically, it doesn't matter if you ever get it straightened out. I'll get you a firearm anytime. Government's position is that the evidence presented in Haskins' statement, Eller's testimony, and the inferential evidence of the recordings is sufficient to sustain the conviction. Unless there are any other questions.
Nope. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you.
You have 2 minutes.
Your Honor, I just wanted to briefly point you to the language that we quoted in our reply brief. Mr. Haskins has asked, how did you know? How did you find out he was a felon? Did he tell you? No. Somebody had said, I mean, like, I say, he's cut off by the ATF agent. Well, did you assume then, or were you then told that he went to prison? No. You know he couldn't go in. You knew he couldn't go in to buy a gun. You knew he couldn't possess a gun, right? I knew he, according to this conversation, that he was having problems or something, and he was appealing it, trying to get it overturned. And, of course, that last bit was something that Mr. Haskins learned after the sale was concluded. Mr. Haskins' own testimony that he gave to the ATF agents voluntarily, he never knew that Eller had been convicted, that he had gone to prison. It just was not reasonable of the jury to find that Mr. Haskins had this knowledge of Mr. Eller's felony. It doesn't rise to the level of the other cases that actually upheld convictions under 922D. Under the broadening of the indictment point, I just wanted to point, Your Honors, to Willoughby, which I'm sure you're well familiar with. But this is very parallel to that situation where the government narrowed the legitimate scope of a weapons charge to the defendant's use of a firearm in connection with distribution of cocaine. And then they tried to get him for intent to distribute. In this case, it's very similar. We have really a moving target. What is this felony? First, we're told that the felony is a 1993 conviction, and that's what Mr. Haskins expected would be proved up at trial and was not. His knowledge of that was certainly not proven. Instead, the government is tossing around. Perhaps it's because Mr. Haskins thought that Mr. Eller was a pedophile because he made some kind of sarcastic comment about him doing something to baby kids. What did Mr. Haskins really know at the time of the sale? The government did not establish that at trial beyond a reasonable doubt that it was that he knew that Mr. Eller was a felon. And I'm sorry I didn't have time to address the Commerce Clause issue unless Your Honors would like me to continue with that. But just trying to get in all my rebuttal points, if asked. All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Counsel. You were appointed, you and your firm were appointed to this case, were you? We certainly appreciate that and your vigorous representation of your client.